First sin, while we're kind of getting settled here, turn to the people to either side of yourself and introduce yourself and say hello. Okay, so we have broken a social norm here. Okay, the social norm we have broken is you come in, you sit down, and you ignore the persons to the left and the right of you. Don't do that. It is perfectly permissible in this class to actually say hello to the people you're sitting close by. Furthermore, it turns out that the people in this class are kind of cool. In fact, they're very cool, and if you say hello to them, you might meet some really interesting people who are sitting right next to you or very close to you. So I would encourage you to do that. This class works better if it has a community feeling to it, because we do some fairly personal stuff here. So it's nice to feel you're amongst friends. So please continue to do that. Secondly, to my left is a person that some of you know, Svetlana Merritt. Svetlana is her name, not Svetlana. Svetlana. Right?
Correct.
Okay, and Svetlana has a really interesting class that she's going to tell you about briefly.
And another special announcement.
Okay, and so Svetlana,
I'm here on a double mission. Yeah. My soft voice doesn't project.
So, good morning, everybody. Some of you do know me, as Ben's mentioned, and those of you who do not, I hope you will, if you come to my class. It's the class about sacred sites, and it's a build-up on our previous class we had last year. But this time we're going to be talking about sacred sites from a different perspective. And that different perspective is ancient mystery schools. And, you know, as every knowledge evolves, and I have been doing this work for quite a long time, I have come across certain information in some rare books that led me to that way, which led me into a new direction of study. And I have come to the conclusion that all sacred sites in the world have been located, designed, and built according to certain codes of an ancient sacred knowledge that was taught in temple mysteries or mystery schools of ancient Egypt, Chaldea, Greece, Rome, Hibernium, and even among Native Americans. So this is what we're going to be researching this year. And of course, we're going to do a brief overview of what we did last year and talk about principles of sacred sites and also the nature of earth energies. And then our first meeting is all about the temple mysteries of Egypt and the temples of Egypt, the temple of Karnak, Luxor, and Abydos. And we're going to mention work of a very mysterious, obscure, and difficult to read philosopher, French philosopher, whose name is Schwaller de Lubitz, and who did some absolutely incredible work in the Temple of Luxor. And we will briefly touch upon some of his discoveries and his ideas that have sort of shed different light and understanding of ancient Egyptian way of thinking. So that's our first meeting. The second meeting, we will be talking about the mystery schools of ancient Greece. Eleusinian mysteries, I'm sorry for the pronunciation, and also Pythagorean school. And we will be exploring the sacred sites of ancient Greece and Magna Graecia, or Greater Greece. So we will concentrate on three oracles, the oracles of Delphi, Dodona, and Cumae in Italy. That was Magna Graecia. And Cumae is a good example of a sacred site that has gone defunct. So we're also going to talk about why certain sacred sites stop being sacred. And then the last meeting, we're going to come back to more present moment. And, you know, this sacred knowledge, sacred science, didn't just kind of vanish. Temples were closed, yes, but the knowledge went underground. And we're going to talk about where it resurfaced in modern times. And one of the organizations where it did resurface was the controversial order of Knights Templar. So we will be talking about the Templars and their legacy to modern civilization, which is the art, well, it's kind of permissible to call it revolution in architecture, the Gothic style. So we will be talking about the cathedrals of Chartres, Bruges, Le Mans, those three cathedrals. So that is the class on sacred sites, which if you're interested, I have flyers for. But I'm also here on another mission, and I'm especially thrilled to actually be announcing that on the day of my birthday. So, you're the first people that actually I'm seeing on my birthday and that I'm sharing this day with. And I would like to tell you what I have been working on as an extension of this class on sacred sites, and that was organizing a mystical journey to Crete and mainland Greece. It's like a field trip. I'm teaching about sacred sites, well, let's do something practical. And so this journey is called In the Footsteps of the Great Goddess. And we're going to visit Crete and follow the shrines of worship of the great Minoan goddess in the temple complexes of Knossos, of course, the most famous one, but also Festos and Malia and Katozakros, which are not so well known. And we will hike to cave sanctuaries where the goddess was worshipped, the famous mountain Ida with the Dictyon cave where Zeus was born and where the purest Orphic mysteries were born. And we will visit the artistic gem of Europe, the Archaeological Museum in Heraklion, where some of the absolutely exquisite pre-Hellenic art is found. And of course, you'll have plenty of time to take everything in, meditate, and journal on pristine beaches of Crete, which are jewels. And all of that, we're going to finish with a full moon meditation at a temple at the Oracle of Delphi. It's a dream trip. I created it just as, you know, I would want to do it myself, and this is what I wanted to offer to others, to sample this exciting, wonderful world of sacred sites. participants.
Welcome, wow. And so we put the flyers on the table.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. Happy birthday.
Coming.
Thank you.
Yes, very good. I'm sorry, I'm so bad at technical things.
Very good question. When is it? May 2018. Longer and more detailed description, you can contact. The contact is right on the flyer, so just write to me and I will send you the overview. We're just starting to organize it, so we don't have a website yet. But the class is next Thursday. We changed the date so it doesn't interfere with this class. So Thursday, this same time, Wake Center, room 18. New location.
Okay, so the Sacred Sites class starts next week, next Thursday, this time in room 18 of the Wake Center. Okay, before we launch in, well, we're going to launch in, but I just came up with an interesting fact that may prove useful to you if you want to make some money, in that you can, people will never believe you. So you can bet them anything, and you will win. So here's the fact. You know that DNA is what is our genetic code. You know, the genes are parts of the DNA molecule, and the DNA molecule is a really long, twisted up molecule that sits inside the nucleus of each of the cells in your body. In fact, there are 46 of these twisted up DNA molecules sitting in each nucleus. They're the chromosomes. You know that, right? You've seen the picture of the cell and then the nucleus in it, and then the chromosomes crunched up in there. The 46 long chromosomes that are all crunched up. So the question is, if you took one of those chromosomes in your cell, now cells are really, really, really small. Very microscopic, so they're very small. So the question is, if you took the DNA that was crunched up in the nucleus of each of those cells, and you pulled that DNA out, okay, how long would the DNA of each of your cells stretch? Now, again, the cell is a, you know, 100,000th of an inch long or something, I'm just guessing. So the DNA, how, if you could take that crunched up DNA in the cell nucleus, and you could pull it out, how long would it be? Would it be, wait, would it be, don't make any wild guess, just let me tell you, would it be an inch? You know, would it be 2 inches? I mean, that's huge. That would be many, 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 that would be a million times bigger than the cell. It turns out that if you took the DNA in each of the cells of your body, okay, and you pulled the DNA out and then you strung them together, the DNA in your body, all pulled out, would be 40 billion miles long. I'll get back to how I made the calculation in a minute. 40 billion miles long. The diameter of the solar system is about 7 billion miles. Pluto's extension, you know, the Pluto orbit from here to here, or about 3 billion miles to Pluto. So, but say 7 billion miles is the diameter of the solar system, so the amount of DNA in your body pulled out like this would be about 6 times the diameter of the solar system, about 40 billion miles. Now, when I read this, I thought, there's decimal points have got to be off here. That's the stupidest, ridiculous. How can the DNA in my body be 40 billion miles long? Well, the DNA in each cell in your body is about 8 centimeters long when pulled out. Okay. And there are about, in the newest, what you probably heard is you have 10 trillion cells and 90 trillion bacteria. Actually, the newest statistics show that's not true. There are about 37 trillion cells in your body and about 40 trillion bacterial cells. And they supposedly work together most of the time, occasionally, we hope. But these 37 trillion cells, each of which has 8 centimeters of DNA, when you do the calculation, it comes out really clearly to about 40 billion miles. So nobody is ever going to believe that twisted in the nuclei of the cells in my body are 40 billion miles worth of DNA. Anyway, I just thought I'd tell you that. It has nothing to do with the class. Okay.
I'm surprised how small it is for one cell.
What?
I'm surprised how small it is for one cell.
8 centimeters, yeah. That's what they said. Completely pulled out. Okay, so mindfulness. We've got to start with mindfulness. Just out of curiosity, how many of you practice mindfulness regularly? You raise your hand so I can see. Okay. So, in order, a lot of you, so in order not to preach to the choir and tell you stuff you already know, and in order to include people that don't yet have a mindfulness practice and might want one, let's look at mindfulness from a little different point of view. Let's say there's no such, we don't know any such thing, we never heard the term mindfulness. What do I want that I don't have now if I don't know about that term that I don't know about? What I want is I want a stable base for my mind. I want someplace I can go in my mind that when I'm really worried, or when I got a lot of physical pain, or when I got a really bad environment, or when I got a lot of emotional turmoil, I need a place that I can go in my mind that's stable, that isn't caught up in all this nonsense. Furthermore, I want that place to be really calm. I want to be safe in that place. So I guess I want a stable, safe place. So how can we find, if we were making this up out of nothing, how can we find somehow in our minds a stable, safe place? Well, we would need something that is not caught up in everything else. And we would need something that was soothing and rhythmic and reliable to find. What could that be? Well, guess the only thing that I can think of that fits that description would be my breathing, right? Because my breathing isn't caught up in my emotions, it isn't caught up in my thoughts, it isn't caught up in the external environment, and it's rhythmic and calming. So if I paid attention to my breathing, no matter what else was happening, I would calm down. And if I could, after a while, have that be central in my awareness, then that would be a stable place from which to look at the thoughts, the feelings, the sensations, and the environment, right? So if we're inventing something that gives us safety and stability in the midst of whatever's going on inside us and around us, it might be a good idea to focus on our breathing. So that's step one of the three steps of this process. Is initially, when you're becoming mindful, don't be clever like we all are at this point and say, I'm going to be mindful now, because you're not going to be mindful. You're going to think you're being mindful. You have to actually find your breathing as though you were a rank beginner, which you are. That's why they call it beginner's mind, right? So you just keep coming back to your breathing. And for a while, you ignore everything else. You just feel your breathing. And when you get caught up in stuff, which will happen every millisecond, come back to your breathing. You don't change your breathing. You just feel that you are breathing. And especially, you feel the abdomen moving. Actually, the whole body participates, so if you're really subtle, you can feel the shoulders open and close and the head go up and down and even the arms and legs open. But especially, you feel the belly move and even the chest. So you keep coming back to that. That's step one. Then step two is you extend that calmness. You let it permeate out from your breathing so that everything else is influenced by that calmness. You don't make things calm. You can't calm your thoughts, you know. You can't get rid of your feelings. But what you can do is you can feel that calmness in your breathing, and then you can feel how it opens out through the feelings, the thoughts, the sensations. So you're taking the breathing and you're softening and opening around it on every level, physical, emotional, mental.
Spiritual.
Breathing. Step two, soften and open. Step one, Pay attention to the breathing. Step two, soften and open at every level. Let the breathing relax. Step three is, wouldn't it be good, in addition to being safe and stable and calm, wouldn't it be good to know what was going on so we could learn from it and maybe adjust it deftly through skillful means on it? Well, when you are breathing and you're softening and opening, you're also aware of your breathing and the softening and opening process. Why not extend that awareness to include the thoughts, the feelings, and the sensations? So you breathe, you soften and open, and you notice whatever you notice. You don't try to notice stuff, you don't try not to notice stuff, you just notice. One, breathe. Two, soften and open. Three, notice whatever you notice. And after a while, when you get practice at this, you can very reliably come to a stable place, allow that calmness to suffuse the rest of your system, and become incredibly good at knowing exactly what's happening in your mind, in your heart, in your body, and around you. That's the theory. Let's practice, shall we? Well, bottom line, for people that don't know what to do, bottom line is forget everything I just told you. It's all going to be more thoughts in your head. Just feel your breathing and let everything relax. And whatever you notice, you notice. Yeah, let's leave it open, okay? So if there are sounds, you have two options. One sound is listen to the sound and then get all bothered by it and forget about your breathing and sit there thinking, I wish they would shut up. That's the normal way we are. Second thing is, hear a sound, think an irritated thought, feel a little irritation go through your emotions, watch that process and just go, oh, interesting, I got a little perturbed about a sound, gosh, pretty reactive, huh? Back to my breathing, soften and open, soften and open. All right, 10 minutes. One last thing, that's always one last thing for me. Okay. 10 minutes, okay. But in this 10 minutes, the only effort you make is when you lose your breathing, come back to it. Do not try to do anything else. Do not try to clear your mind. Do not try to get more relaxed. Any effort will be exactly opposite to what you want to happen. So what you're doing is you're just resting your awareness on your breathing. When it leaves, bring it back, soften and open, and you notice what you notice. Thank you. Oh, it's very nice. What you notice is significant. It gives you information about how your system is working, what's on your mind, what the level of tension in your system is. So it's a voyage into yourself so that you can kind of see from the inside how things are operating. Secondly, this softening and opening thing, it turns out that we hold tension at a lot of levels. Some of it's pretty subtle. So as you sit for a little while, you discover physical tensions. For example, oh, my shoulders are a little tight, or my gut's a little tight, or I'm holding my arm a little funny, you know? But you also discover mental tensions and emotional tensions. So this process of softening and opening is a process that has many levels, and as you get more practice at doing this, you get to more subtle openings and more complete openings. And then practical use for this, I use this all the time when I'm being examined by a doctor or being worked on by a dentist. For two reasons. First, because I want to be calm in the process, but also I want to influence that person because they're rushed. You know, they're in that, you know, and I want the settledness and the presence and the okayness that I feel to kind of suffuse them somehow so they do a better job. I don't have any control group, but it does seem to work. It does seem like I calm them down by my calm, as opposed to my getting more upset because they're rushing. So I would commend that to you. We could say a lot more about mindfulness, and we will as time goes on, but we kind of need to
move the bus.
Okay, so a couple of very quick announcements, which is please remember to sign in each week. If you miss a class or want to hear a class again, thanks to Michael and Robert, the classes are recorded, and then they are put on this website, swt.org/Spencer, and you can find a lot of past stuff there. You can also find the most recent class. It takes maybe, how long? 2 days?
2 weeks.
2 weeks.
Because he brings it from the
next week. So it takes about 2 weeks, and then there it comes up there. Okay? Thanks to Michael and Rob.
Oh, okay. Well, maybe it'll be faster.
If you would like help in meditating, there's a lot of stuff on the internet for free. One of those things is you go to my website. There are various audio files there that you can listen to, or written material that you can read that helps you with mindfulness. You can also go to swt.org/Spencer, and if you have written a little autobiography or a little snippet about your life, it's there. And if you would like to put yourself on swt.org and also in a book that we have, Donna?
For several decades, the members of this class have contributed to the red book sitting there, which normally that's where it is. And you can borrow it for reading the plans of these things. And they're usually a page or two long, an anecdote from your life, or a life story if you can get it in 2 pages. And it's really interesting because fascinating snippets of lives from people that we really haven't connected with. So feel free to borrow that thing. And if you want to contribute to it, give me 2 copies, or I guess really just 1 copy. I'll put it in the book, and then I get it to Robert, and Robert will put it on the website with the others.
Thank you. This is Donna. Who's been doing this for quite a while now. And so it would be nice if everybody's voice were represented somehow. You want to put a poem in there? Put a poem in there or something that you drew. That would be fine also. Something of your voice that is a part of our chorus. Okay? Which I guess leads me to the next thing. A beautiful segue.
Could I mention?
Yes, Michael.
I noticed this morning that right outside there is a gender-neutral bathroom. I went into the office and asked if I could use it, and they said it's not for anyone, it's for everyone. So that's a yes. Also, some of us, after every class, go over to the daily grind on mission for a little connection and communication, reflection. It's sort of a post-game wrap-up. So if everyone is
I got an announcement. They have a new coffee vending machine over where the other vending machines are at. It's like a coffee machine for class.
Okay, so a new coffee vending machine. And I got to tell you that I'm having a hard time these days. I can't find a place to go to the bathroom because I'm not gender neutral.
Well, I use a woman's talking with me.
Right, so, back to the segue that I used, the clips. Bring your artwork to class and put it around before class and after class so people can see it. This is a perfect, this is lovely people and a perfect venue, so please feel free to bring your artwork week after week. And in the last class, at the last class, we'll have a special art fair, so I'll encourage everybody to bring something in, or just about everybody to bring something in. But you don't have to wait for that. You can bring your artwork any week. Just put it around, come a little early, and stay a little after class. Okay. All right, so, most of you have heard me say this before, so I will be brief about it, but mindfulness is a necessary but not sufficient condition for well-being. Mindfulness is a necessary but not sufficient condition for well-being. We used to think it was. Just become mindful, everything will be all right. And maybe in 100,000 lifetimes, that will be the case. But for most of us, what mindfulness does is it allows us to step back from the hurly-burly of our lives and gain some relief and some perspective. So the stepping back is great, but then we have to step forward into our lives again in a healthier way. And for that, we need psychology. We need what we know about what creates well-being. So it's a two-step process. First, you need to get more aware and less caught up. And then you need to re-immerse yourself in life in an enhanced way. And that's what we're going to be talking about in this class. One way to look, one of many, I'm sure, ways to look at what constitutes a really full life, or a life really well lived, would be a life that makes the best use of the mind and the best use of the heart. That would seem to be a full human being living a full life. So, but what's the best use of the mind? Most people would probably say the best use of the mind is the mind that is the wild, that is, has developed wisdom. Wisdom seems to be the more, kind of the most profound way we can use the mind, not just gathering knowledge, but something beyond that. So if we can, at least for our purposes, say that one way to look at the best use of the mind would be to develop wisdom, then we have to look at what wisdom is. And if we could look at the best use of the heart, we would say the best use of the heart is probably the use of the heart that has to do with the fullest opening of the heart. And one way to look at the fullest opening of the heart would be passion. That which we are completely enthusiastic about, we totally love. Now that passion is a much broader word than sexual passion. It means complete enthusiasm. In fact, I will define it better in a little while. So one way to look at a well-being, or the best kind of being, would be to look at wisdom and passion as they develop in us and create a fuller, richer sense of life. So far I didn't say anything objectionable, so I assume that everybody is kind of with me.
Well, you said that he didn't include the body. Awareness in the body. For a complete whole body.
Yeah, let me think about it. I have to think more about it, but right offhand I would say yes. and that it when I talk about well-being, the factors of well-being, I will certainly talk about that. So this would be, I guess, let's talk about this in a little more circumspect way as the best use of the mind in its two capacities of thought and emotion. And we'll add the body to it. But yes, I won't leave that out. So I went looking for definitions of wisdom, and I found, to my great relief, that there is no good definition of wisdom. That there are so many different definitions, and I read some of the more psychologically current ones, and I hated them. I thought that they were not very wise. That gave me license to make my own definition. So I did. So wisdom, my definition thereof, you can make up your own definition. But my definition of wisdom is, by the way, this is all preparatory to the exercise we're going to do today, okay? So this is, it's not a long speech. My definition of wisdom is, it has three components. Component one, it is the broadest knowledge, either in a particular area, because you're wise in that area, or in general, you're wise in general. The broadest knowledge, let's say in an area, the deepest understanding. So not only do you know all the stuff in that area, you also know how it all, where it all comes from, how it all ties together. So it's the broadest knowledge, the deepest understanding. And then I add a third component to it, which is the best judgment about how to make changes, be active, do something to create an effect in that area. Know what to do. So knowing the extent of it, knowing the essence of it, and knowing how to be effective. So I call the three E's. Wisdom in a particular area or in general is extent, broad knowledge, essence, knowing where all that comes from and how it all ties together, what its core is, what its genesis is, so the essence of it, and then knowing how to be effective in that area. So if somebody's going to be my foreign policy advisor, I want that foreign policy advisor to know a whole heck of a lot about what's going on around the world. I want that person to know why that stuff is going on, and I want that person to give me really good advice about what to do about what's going on. I don't know that person exists, certainly not him, but anyway.
So that in mind, it would seem like if you can't come up with a definition, you can certainly come up with a corollary. And the corollary is what we live in today, as you just brought up, Trump, etc. Yes. That's the corollary of wisdom. And then you can go from there and go to the positive aspects.
I'm not sure corollary is the thing that...
Antithesis.
The antithesis of it, yes, right. It's not corollary, it's contrary to it.
Antithesis.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. By its negative, you can see the positive. Okay, so anyway. So that's my definition of... the three E's are my definition of wisdom, and we'll use that in a little bit. Now let's talk about passion. So... passion, there are various things I could have said, but what I jotted down is, passion, in my view, is total attention. When you're passionate about something, you're completely focused on it. When I'm doing my photography, sometimes I find myself in the middle of the road. I don't know how I got to the middle of the road, or I can find myself halfway down a cliff. I don't know how I got there. This is really true. I'm so completely focused on getting that shot that it's the only thing in my focus. And I think passion is like that. Passion is the total focus. It's the strongest motivation. When you're passionate about something, you want that totally. You want that completely. So the motivation is the strongest. It's entire enthusiasm. There's no bridle to your enthusiasm. It's unbridled. You're completely enthusiastic about that. It's total opening. When you're passionate about something, there's no reserve about how you open to it. You open completely to what you're passionate about. And it's absolute commitment. When you're passionate about something, you're entirely in. And we can look at it as unification. When you're passionate about something, you're one with it. That's flow, another way to look at it. And the sum total of, I tried to put all these things together in a clever acronym, and it came out, I couldn't figure out one, so I just put the word love down. Because I think passion at its base is full love. So when you're passionate about something, you love it completely. So, given those two definitions, let's now do a little assessment of how we stand with regard to these things. So you will need a sheet or two of paper and something to write with. Stuff to kind of get you thinking about this more. So don't worry if you don't do a perfect job here or if nothing comes to you. This is just a series of contemplations we're doing, okay? To just quicken your self-understanding in this regard. So the first thing is just a very simple one about wisdom. So here's the question. And then just write down whatever comes to you. You don't have to think hard about it. Just what pops into your mind. So, in what domains are you wise? That is, in what areas do you have broad knowledge, deep understanding, and the capacity for effective action? And in what areas are you not fully wise, but developing in that direction? So again, the criteria for wisdom are broad knowledge, deep understanding, and the capacity for effective action. So in what area or areas are you wise? Do you have those things developed? And in what area or areas are you developing, but haven't completely developed those? So just for 2 minutes, jot down whatever comes. about maybe a minute more. For some of us, that was pretty, John. Yeah.
I just want to say what we just did is what no robot or AI will ever do.
We're actually going to talk about robots and AI quite a bit in this class, and we'll check that. I hope that's true, but let's see what people say about that. Yeah, but the question, the more general question is, can one of those machines ever be truly wise, rather than just smart? But, we'll get there. Okay, we'll get there. For some of us, this was a pretty, A, brief, and B, kind of sobering exercise. Because I didn't put that a whole lot. Which leads us to the conclusion, if you were in that camp, that wisdom is not so easy to develop. The wisdom is kind of a rare thing, in that most of the things that I do in my life, I don't have extensive knowledge, I don't have essential understanding, and I don't have effective action necessarily. Not all three. So just something to think about. This is, again, just seeding our understanding. But that's the easy exercise. Okay. Let me tell you about the other one, which is kind of going to be more extensive and more fun, actually. I got to say one more thing about wisdom and passion, which is either one divorced from the other can be undesirable and sometimes dangerous. That is, if you only have wisdom but you don't have passion, that's a kind of dry way to live. You know, that's kind of removed, dispassionate, non-vital way to live. Maybe some people want to live that way. They want to live in a kind of fashion where they really understand, but they're not involved. But to me, that's kind of, it loses it, the dimension of vitality. Passion without wisdom can create real havoc. Right, you know, people that are passionate about stuff that's not good for them or other people can really make the world go crazy or really make themselves bad. So passion needs to be tempered with wisdom. And I think that wisdom needs to be enlivened by passion. What's your first name?
Adam.
Say it.
Adam. Could you talk a little bit about the wisdom that comes about when one recognizes they don't know what they're talking about? In other words, being wise enough to say, I don't have this in this area, or...
So that's incipient wisdom. That's the beginning of wisdom, to realize that wisdom is more profound than trivial knowledge. And so when you realize, you know, I'm really not wise in this area because I really don't know it all, and I don't know the essence of it, or even if I do know it all, I don't know the essence of it, and I don't know what to do about it. So that's a step toward realizing one's lack of wisdom is a step toward gaining that wisdom. Because when you realize that, then what are you going to do? You say, well, I have to understand this more deeply. An example of that for myself was in a fairly trivial area, which I didn't put down, is I thought about emotions for a long time, Because I read in the psych books all these theories of emotion and lists of emotion, and it was all nonsense. And I knew it was nonsense, and it was the nonsense that I had been schooled in and the nonsense that I knew. And I knew this is stupid. This is not wise, and I am not wise about this. And it led me on a year-long journey to figure out what emotion was, which I came up with, and I'll share with you at some point, because that takes a while to do, and some of you have already heard me talk about it. But I gained wisdom about that area by my realization of how unwise I was, both in terms of what to do and how to manage my emotions, but also in terms of understanding what they were. Good question. So dissatisfaction is always the first step in growth, right? You're satisfied, you don't change anything, it's all cool. Which is why Chuck Yung Trungpo said, in one of my favorite quotes of all time, which you probably heard me say too many times, the shit of our neurosis is the fertilizer of our enlightenment. Right? When you're not happy, you grow. When you're happy, you just get what the hell. Same old thing. Okay, but back to where we're going, okay, which is to passion. Now, this one should be trivially easy, but it turns out that I have clients who come to me sometimes, and they say, you know, I've done a really good job with my life to this point. I've been a good... I've done my work really well. You know, I've done my parenting really well. And now I want to do something else. What should I do? Or they say, I've done all my roles really well, but, you know, I got lost in the process somehow. Something got left behind. And now I want to refine myself. How do I do that? And so I say to them, well, what do you love? What do you love? And they say, I love family. Love playing golf. And then it dries up. What happened to us in the course of growing up? This is typical. That assignment, I say, go home and make a list of the things you love. You know, they come back the next week and I say, where's your assignment? And they say, I don't know. It occurs to me that something got lost, and then I need to give them better coaching. So if you are in that camp, I have devised a little questionnaire to help you think more deeply about and extensively about what it is that you might be passionate about or grow to be passionate about, or remember that you are passionate about, okay? So, I'm going to ask you 15 questions. Write down each question. The reason that I want you to do that is when you're writing it down, your mind is already working on it. And then in that couple of seconds when you write it down, then whatever pops into your mind without censorship, write it down. Okay? Nobody's going to see this. Write it down without censorship. Whatever comes to your mind. If nothing comes, don't worry about it. It might come later. Don't worry if you can't answer a particular question. Sometimes there's only one answer to the question. Sometimes there'll be a bunch of stuff that comes. Write it all down. Oh, one more thing I want to say is when I ask people, what do you love, what do you want, I actually ask them, what do you want to do? And they can't answer. But when I ask them, what do you have to do? They're real good about that, so shows you something. Okay, so here we go. There will be 15 questions, and I just titled this passion, or potential passion, I guess.
What's the question?
Say again?
What's the question?
I'm going to repeat it, start them one at a time. Okay, so question one. Again, don't think about this too much. Just write it down or whatever pops into your mind. Don't analyze it or you go nowhere. Okay. Question one. What makes you feel most alive? Question one, what makes you feel most alive? You can put me if you like. All right, I'll translate. What makes me feel most alive? As quick as you can, whatever comes. Question two. If there's more, then keep writing. We'll just come back to it. But question two. Some of these I can't translate into the me from. They got to be the way they are. Okay. If I told you, you can do anything. What would it be? So there's no constraint. Money, physical constraint, there's no constraint of any kind. Okay. If I told you, you can do anything, what would it be? So write down, if I told you, you could do anything, what would it be? Okay, question three. What's the best time I ever had doing some activity? What's the best time I ever had doing some activity? Question four. Similar question, but maybe different answer will come. Four. What's the most fun I ever had? What's the most fun I ever had? Question five. When was the last time I had a truly great day? What was I doing? When was the last time I had a truly great day? What was I doing? Okay, question six. If I was 20 again, what sport, activity, or hobby would I take up? If I were 20 again, what sport, activity, or hobby would I take up? Question seven. Hope I'm not rushing.
No, you've got 1 minute per.
No, 1 or 2 minutes per. Okay, seven. What do I most like to read about? What do I most like to read about? Question eight. When I was young, what most fascinated me, when I was young, what most fascinated me, think very young, five to ten, you know, that kind of thing. Question 9. What did I want to be when I grow up? When I grew up? What did I want to be when I grew up? Think back. What did I want to be when I grew up? Question 10. You might want to think back on question 9 again a little when you get a little more time. There's a lot of stuff going on when you're a little about what you want to be, probably. Question 10. If I could wear any costume I wanted to on Halloween, who or what would I be? Don't show this anyway. If I could wear any costume I wanted to on Halloween, what would I be? What or who would I be? Thank you. 11. Question 11.
How many do we have? How many questions?
15. So, we'll be a couple minutes late, but we are. Okay. So question 11. Okay. Question 11. If I could succeed at any career, what would I do? If I could succeed at any career, what would I do? You know, there could be more than one answer to that question, obviously. Question 12. Who, living or dead, would I most like to meet and spend time with? Who, living or dead, would I most like to meet and spend time with? Okay. 13. That's one that you might fill in a little more also. Okay. 13. Where would I most like to travel? Where would I most like to travel? 14. What of anything at all would I most like to experience? What of anything at all would I most like to experience? Not who, but what do I truly love? What do I truly love? Not who, what do I truly love? This over and see if anything else comes to you. So the question about both these exercises is, what do they stimulate in you? What do you recall? What is it? What emerges from having done this in terms of giving you a hint about where more aliveness lies for you? Because the goal of this session is to somehow quicken our aliveness, right? Become more alive. So these are leading questions that point us in directions that we may have forgotten about or walled off as being impossible. So the question is, how could we open up some of these possibilities in a practical way, in a realizable way? But if you don't ask the pure question, you can't figure out how to tailor it to your current life situation. So these are kind of pure questions to get you started. Okay, so we have to break for, if you have any questions, come up and see me. We have to break for this week. Next week, well, you'll see. We'll start, we have some fairly profound stuff to do next week.